Well, 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 your portal for up-to-date information on sexual health and well-being.
Sponsored by Thorn Harbour Health. Thornharbour.org.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Welcome to Well, Well, Well. You're in the studio today with Renee in the wake of Lesbian Day of Visibility tomorrow. So you've heard me talk about my bisexuality, and I've given myself a 70-30 ratio, you know, like 70% into women and 30% into men. But in reality, right now, I'm probably living a 90-10 lifestyle, because as attracted as I am to men and their physiology, I'm rarely attracted to their personality or energy like I am women. So I think it's important to be vocal about my bisexuality, but nonetheless, bi people are still experiencing lots of bi erasure and biphobia. So, sorry, I'm not going to pick a side, but because it is Lesbian Day of Visibility tomorrow, I've decided that we should probably get some lesbians in the studio. So I have some very special guests with me today, and we're going to be talking specifically about lesbian sexuality and sexual health, which is certainly something I have lived experience with and will therefore be sharing my experiences along with our guests. So my guests for this evening are Ellie and Danny. Hi, dolls.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
It's really great to have you both here.
Great to be here.
So we will be putting on a song and we'll return to get to know Ellie and Danny properly and delve into what it's like to be a lesbian in 2019 in the lead up to Lesbian Day of Visibility tomorrow.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy, and you're in the studio tonight with Renee and my very special guests, Danny and Ellie. Hello.
Ooh. Hi.
Hey.
Hi. You're still here. So tomorrow is Lesbian Day of Visibility, and I'm sure lots of people have been talking on Joy about that. But I've got some real-life lesbians in the studio with me to talk about life as a lesbian every other day of the year, not just on Lesbian Day of Visibility. Hello, both. Can you give the listeners a little bit of information about yourself?
Come on, Danny.
I'm Danny. I'm 25. Mm. I'm from New Zealand. Mm. I've lived in Melbourne on and off for like 5 years.
Cool. Yeah. Is Melbourne home now?
I think it is, yeah. I get homesick for both places.
Yeah, it's always hard when you live somewhere else, but I guess Melbourne has all of the things, doesn't it?
Has everything.
And a lot more humans, which means a lot more women.
And a lot more diversity.
Diversity. Yeah. The diversity is really nice. How about you, Ellie?
I'm Ellie. I'm 23. I'm from Vancouver, but that's real old news, like 16 years ago. So Melbourne's definitely home. But yeah, have that from two places, two homes kind of feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're all in that boat. And you both identify as lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
pretty
when,
gay.
Yeah, gay AF. So, Danny, can you tell me when you came out?
I came out last year when I was 24. So I felt like I was like a late bloomer in the queer world.
Yeah.
Like I always knew I was bi, but it hit me. It really hit me. Yeah, when I was 24.
I didn't come out till I was 21, and that was a really long time ago. And I thought that was late, but I think everyone comes to these conclusions in their own time. But you were bi.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, you were out. You just didn't come fully out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what about you, Ellie?
I was 18 when I came out, but I didn't do much of a coming out to people.
Yeah.
I just kind of started sleeping with women, and as new people came into my life, they kind of knew that was happening.
Mm.
My parents are really Christian, so I didn't want to put them through thinking about me sleeping with women. So I just told them when I had a girlfriend rather than like sitting them down.
I was the complete opposite.
Oh,
I was
wow.
like, you will accept me as a gay woman. Sit the down.
Let's do this really dramatically because I am a dramatic person. And was it like a big deal for your family?
I think my dad was pretty stoked, but my mum, he was like, yeah, cool. He thinks I'm like the coolest person ever.
He's not wrong.
Yeah, true. But my mum was like really shocked.
Okay.
But it's been a work in progress.
Are they religious at all? Or
no.
None
I think
of that?
Just from like an older generation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like they're both in their late 60s. So. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's completely different for mm-hmm. them. And you're both relatively young, I mean, in comparison to me. Do you think that coming out is becoming easier for young people than what it would have been, say, 10, 20 years ago?
Like, yeah, but I think it's geographical. Mm. It matters where you are.
And cultural, hey? Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I definitely had the same air about it, like, you're going to accept this, but I didn't really give them very much information about what they needed to accept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's true. So I think, like, even growing up in Ireland, the religious element to things meant that, like, even for my sister, who's only a couple of years older than me, if she has a kid that's gay, she's going to react in a very similar fashion to what my parents did. And it's like they haven't progressed at all generationally. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you're right. I think coming out in Australia, in somewhere like Melbourne, probably isn't that difficult for young people now, geographically.
I think it is quite celebrated to be different here.
I believe that visibility days can be a bit problematic. You know, like, shouldn't every day be about visibility? So I think it's important for us to speak up and speak out about our sexuality as well, and to be able to feel comfortable too. Mm-hmm. And like, on that note, you know, growing up, it's always good for young people to have role models and lesbian role models. Did either of you have any when you were growing up?
Zero. I can't think of like one.
Really?
One person in the spotlight that was a lesbian to me.
Yeah.
Maybe Ellen.
But it's kind of like everyone's answer, hey, because I don't know if there really are any other out lesbian. I mean, there were characters in TV shows like the L Word and things like that, but actual IRL lesbians wasn't really visibility.
No.
Yeah, I definitely had people in the spotlight that I wished were gay. Aubrey Plaza.
Who's that?
Get on to me.
Who's Aubrey Plaza?
She was April in Parks and Recreations. She's in Legion.
Okay.
Good. She's a babe.
Perfection.
Perfect.
Perfect. Are there many spaces that you girls feel like you can be visible and safe and out as lesbians? Like, or do you have to feel like you have to pretend to be someone different in different spaces in your life?
I think I come at it pretty head on always. Mm. I make myself pretty visible.
Ellie, just to picture it, is sitting here in fluorescent green from head to toe. She doesn't like to fade into the background.
I was dubbed in this outfit Radioactive Dyke. So, yeah, pretty visible. How about you, Danny?
I think I'm the same. Mm. I think I've usually been pretty open. Because I was a stripper and like I've worked in that industry for like 5 or 6 years. That's pretty open.
Yeah.
Very open-minded.
There are a lot of queer women that work in the sex industry though, right?
Heaps.
Yeah. Cool. And as far as like lesbian sexuality is concerned, it doesn't feel like many lesbians really want to talk openly about sex or feel comfortable to. Do you think that women as a whole are quite sexually oppressed?
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm on a mission to combat that though. And I hope that everyone will join me.
Mm. From what I've seen, you're doing a good job.
Thank you. I don't like speaking from my own experience, I've always been quite openly sexual and horny and vocal about sex in a rebellious sense because I've always been kind of rebellious against religion and whatnot, but I think giving women the permission to do the same thing sometimes is all it takes, is just for them to see other women being open and free about that. And then they're like, oh yeah, I'm that too.
Yeah.
And so it's been really nice to watch how other people react whenever I'm very open about my sexuality as well. So that's been really cool. And even coming out as bisexual in the last couple of years, I think that has been interesting to watch people around me and their reactions to that, because I did identify as a lesbian for a really long time. And as I started to reflect upon my sexual activity, I realized that I'm too horny for one gender, but also like
too horny to have a type.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I used to have these Mr. Haps every few years and I was like, no, they're not Mr. Haps. It's actually just my sexuality and that's okay. Yeah. Felt good. But yeah, lesbian sexual health and sex education is such a huge minefield. And we will come back to talking a little bit more about that after some community service announcements.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
So in the last segment, we were talking about lesbian sexual health and sex education being a bit of a minefield. So I'm curious to hear from you both. Where did you learn about lesbian sex, in air quotes, and how it's done?
Definitely with partners.
Yeah?
Yeah. Definitely not from, like, I haven't, had never seen lesbian sex on TV or anything like that.
Yeah.
The media. Definitely no. Just from exploring.
Yeah. And in a lot of the movies that had lesbian affairs or whatever in it, they usually didn't show very much, or, you know.
Yeah, not an accurate representation anyway.
Yeah, cool. And what about you, Ellie?
Yeah, definitely in the field. Not
in the field?
Yeah, in the field.
You mean the literal field with grass and cows? So just from, like, hooking up with people?
Yeah, yeah, like, even before I had had sex with women, like, lesbian porn, I was like, this doesn't seem legit. It just doesn't seem like the way that it happens.
Yeah. I guess for me, I've always been pretty horny, like, since I was in the womb. And, like, I always went looking for sex, but I guess I didn't really learn about lesbian sex through the channels that I was masturbating through, like watching porn and whatnot. And yeah, it wasn't until I started hooking up with girls that I realized what lesbian sex could look like, mm-hmm. and how it can take many different pathways, and mm-hmm. it's not just about penetration or lack of penetration. I kind of made it my life mission to find really good lesbian porn, and I'm still on that mission, and we'll talk a bit more about that in a little while. Let's talk a bit about sexual health for lesbians. Are you both aware of how to care for your sexual health, and how did you learn about that?
I'm aware it's important. I'm aware there's not very many practical measures for lesbians, mm-hmm. like especially with oral and, you know, no condoms.
Yeah.
Don't think anybody's using dental dams.
Definitely not. Which, I mean, as a sexual health organization, we make sure that we distribute those in case people need them. But the feedback that we always get is nobody is using them. But yeah, lesbians can be prone to many sexual ailments that don't fall into the STI categories. STI being sexually transmitted infections. For example, things like bacterial vaginosis, urinary tract infections, and thrush. And so for lots of women, this is from my experience of talking to them about their experience with their vaginas, is that they're not aware of what's normal, in air quotes, and what's not, and what they should do about it. And a lot of women are struggling with things like bacterial vaginosis and living with it and not knowing what to do. Mm-hmm. And for our listeners, if you haven't experienced bacterial vaginosis before, the only treatment that they offer you for that is 7 days of antibiotics, which you can't drink alcohol on, which is pure torture.
I had a Russian doctor give me antibiotics that I could drink on, and she was very clear about telling me it wasn't for BV. She was very clear about telling me you can drink on these. And then I got some for bacterial vaginosis, and she was like, no alcohol.
None.
You take alcohol, you go to ambulance.
No, they make you violently sick.
Yeah.
I mean, for people who have cases of reoccurring BV, which is way more common than anyone knows or talks about, you can't continually be on antibiotics. So there's a lot of research that needs to be done in that area. And I think what's difficult is we're only starting to open up that space to talk about those things in lesbian sexual health, because people are experiencing lots of shame around that. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot to do with the fact that people don't want to talk about their discharge. They don't want to talk about their vaginas. And it's actually inhibiting sexual activity for a lot of people as well because of that shame. It can be difficult for queer people as a whole to learn about proper sex education, but certainly for lesbians, because they don't talk openly about sex, as we've mentioned, a lot of the time. So we'll come back to opening up later on. But have either of you heard about lesbian bed death?
Never.
Yes.
Yeah? What's your knowledge of it?
I think that it's, like, dramatized a bit.
Yes.
I think that a lot of relationships... This is going to sound real defensive. I think a lot of relationships, no matter the orientation, can just have a sexless segment or, you know, eventuation.
Yeah, for sure. I think that it's probably more obvious in a lesbian relationship that's long term, for a few reasons. And I guess that when you put two women together, there are lots of reasons why libido can be lost, as well as just being with the same person for a really long time and being with no one else.
The fact that people often think two women are just very good friends. Mm. So they're constantly having that thrown at them, like, oh, they're just really good friends. And so when the sex isn't there for a while, they're like, oh, we're just really good friends. Or maybe not even at that point.
Yeah. Well, I think it's also one of those things where women aren't always confident to be the instigator. And sometimes when you get to that comfort level of being with someone for a really long time, just nobody bothers to instigate. And then next thing you know, it's been like a couple of weeks, couple of months. And then they're like, oh, well, we still love each other. So This is me speaking from my experience of being in long-term relationships. And I think that whenever it gets to around the 3-year mark is whenever I've really noticed it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Yeah. But to be in a relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll get there.
No, I won't.
But like, can you imagine if when a couple got to that place that they acknowledged that the regularity of their sex had dwindled and maybe it's a conversation they could have to shake things up a bit. And that could look like lots of things, like exploring kink together or doing some kind of workshops that changes this the way that they have sex, or even thinking about bringing a third person in to play.
I just want to stop this and say Renee is wearing a shirt that says third wheel. Carry on.
I think it's a really nice thing to do for people. It's very friendly. It's and
so selfless.
Selfless and really good at sharing. But I think this stuff is actually happening a lot more than we know. But once again, people aren't talking about it, whether they're afraid of judgment from their friends or from their community. But I think lots of friends are looking after each other in that respect. I know that gay guys traditionally have been really good at doing open relationships and compartmentalizing sex and emotions and being able to have relationships but also have sex outside of those. And I reckon that we're doing it as well, or lesbians are doing it as well, but it's maybe not being celebrated as much as what gay guys are doing. Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts on that?
I think that just women talking about sex doesn't happen that as much as men do.
Mm.
Like, I think that is changing and can change.
Yeah.
And I think if female-female relationships were, you know, if they were talking between themselves about sex, why they're not having it, you know, I don't even think it'd get to the point where they're not having it.
Yeah, even just talking about the weirdness of sex, you know, like talking about sex on period and stuff like that. Like, people are ashamed of that, and the ones that aren't talking about it.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Before the song, we discussed lesbian bed death or lack of libido. But in my experience, that only seems to affect women who have been in quite long-term relationships. Do you think that women experience a lot of shame around their sexuality, which therefore makes them feel less sexually liberated to explore new things or even other women?
Yes, definitely. And I think we're brought up by women who have that as well.
That's really a lot to do with it,
yeah,
isn't it?
Definitely.
Like the women role models that we have growing up and how sexually liberated they are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was brought up to not have sex before I was married.
Same.
And that was with a man. So sexual liberation was definitely the polar opposite of what I experienced growing up. Mm-hmm. But maybe that's why we're so horny now.
Well, yeah, my first encounter with my vagina was just like immediately coated in a thick layer of shame.
I feel that.
Like, yeah. I was like 4 and I was playing with these blankets, and then I was like kind of flossing and I didn't even know what was going on.
Flossing?
Yeah, pulling it back and forth between my legs. I was like, this is great. This is better than any of my toys. And then my mum came in and she was like, what are you doing? Never do that. That's terrible. Ugh. She was so freaked out because her own sexuality freaks her out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also like masturbation in like a lot of religions is completely taboo and frowned upon.
Sin.
Yeah, sinful. Yeah.
Really just bottle it up and then, you know.
Yeah, let it explode in a really dangerous way. So, like, talking about sexual experiences with other people, as I said before, something I really like to do. Do you like to share your sexual experiences with friends, especially other lesbian friends?
Very much so.
Yeah.
Mm.
What about you, Dani?
Yeah, I love that.
Mm.
I feel really blessed to have heaps of friends that are really open about sex.
Yeah.
Whether they're queer or not.
Yeah, it's good. I genuinely enjoy how much it makes my friends horny telling my stories as well. Yeah. I have a friend who's, you know, been in a relationship for a little while, and even just spending a weekend at a festival with her, by the end of it, she was just like, I feel so horny spending time around you. I can't wait to go home and see my partner and, like, fuck her brains out. And I'm like, yeah, girl, go get it. Awesome. I'll be your inspo.
I feel that on a soul level after spending the weekend with you too. Yesterday I was walking around and I was like, you know. Things were happening.
I remember about 10 years ago when I first went on my mission to find good lesbian porn, I discovered Ultimate Surrender. Have either of you ever heard of it before?
No.
Yes.
Right. So for our listeners who haven't heard of it before, it's lesbian wrestling porn. And I think I showed every woman that I knew at the time because it just blew my mind. It was the first time I'd seen something that felt quite authentic, but also two women fucking with a strap on. And I was like, wowee. This is a nice time.
It is such a nice time.
What's your thoughts on lesbians using cocks during sex, like strap ons and dildos and whatnot?
I endorse that so much. Like, yes.
I think that for a lot of lesbians, though, like anything that's kind of cock-shaped, cock-size, cock-related can be quite...
Like a sellout?
Yeah, a little bit. I think that that's the opinion that they can have.
I totally have experienced that with people, you know, like, oh, are you even gay? Like, why do you need a dick involved? It's like, you know... Vaginas are kind of dick-shaped.
Yeah.
On the inside, you know, it's meant for, it, like, that.
Fill it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think penetration is a really wonderful thing, and I'm aware lots of lesbians won't have sex with anything that is cock-like, but open your mind and your legs. Yeah.
That needs to be on a t-shirt. I'm going to make it happen.
Make it happen. But strap-ons are a lot of fun. And I think some advice that I would like to give the listeners is to, if you're feeling like you want to explore that, head into a store and see the size and the material that it's made out of in real life. Because ordering sex toys online can be kind of misleading with size ratios, I've learned in the past. I remember the first dick that I ordered online was like 10 inches long and like, oh, it was huge. I gave it to a gay guy thinking that he could do something with it, and he was just like, this is not useful to me.
It's now an ornament.
Yeah, it's pretty much what happened. And also for the listeners, if you're ordering or buying silicone toys, make sure you definitely don't use silicone lubricant on those because it degrades the toys and it is not good for anyone's insides. So I think it's safe to use water-based lubes for lesbians at all times. And another thing, like from a safe sex perspective for lesbians using cocks is put condoms on them. We were talking about bacterial vaginosis earlier, and that can be exchanged between partners by using toys without cleaning them or putting condoms on them. It's another way to be safe. But yeah, speaking of safe sex, women who are having regular sex with different partners should be getting regular health checks done, which is every 3 months, and also checking in with partners about their sexual health history and their checks and how recently they've been, and also the kind of people that you're having sex with, especially if they're bisexual. For our Melbourne listeners, Melbourne Sexual Health Centre is the local government-funded drop-in sexual health centre. So you don't need an appointment. Or if you want to make an appointment on Thursday evenings, they take appointments and all the prescriptions are free as well there. So if you haven't had a sexual health test done in a while, please get yourself over to Melbourne Sexual Health Centre. It's just on Swanson Street near Melbourne Uni. And they also have gynecologists and a lab on site so you can get instant results for your tests.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
This is Well, 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 and tonight's show has been about lesbian sexuality in the wake of Lesbian Day of Visibility tomorrow. I have Ellie and Danny in the studio with me, and they are lesbians.
Represent.
Representing. I want to talk about fisting. Actually, Danny, can you say that line?
I want to talk about fisting.
In that accent. Like, you know, I'm pretty old. I'm 34. I've been out for 13 years. I've been around the block a couple of times. But the thought of fisting used to really scare the crap out of me. My next door neighbor, whenever I was at uni, she was a real life lesbian. Teresa. Hi, if you're listening, Teasy. She was the first person I ever heard talk about fisting. And all I could think of at the time was, there is no way anyone is putting a fist up me.
That's a common thought.
Yeah, for sure. And it seems like such a daunting thing. Even the word itself, say it, Danny.
Fisting.
Fusting. it's intimidating. But yeah, let's talk about how wonderful vaginas are and that they're really good at getting wet and really good at expanding whenever you're aroused. What was your first experience of hearing about fisting?
I think mine was in a book. Uh-huh. I read like a really beautiful queer erotic novel that was based in like the late 1800s.
What's it called?
Tipping the Velvet.
Oh, I've seen the movie.
There's a movie?
There's a series. It's a hot time.
Oh my
what
goodness.
A title. Tipping the Velvet.
Tipping the Velvet.
Oh, it's so nice. And she's got a leather and wooden strap on in it. It's a hot time. You, neither of you have seen it.
No, I've never seen
it. I've got the DVD dolls. We'll have a party.
Movie night.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The book is incredible. It's my favorite book.
It's really great. What about you, Ellie? Fisting?
Hearing about it, not a memory that I have vividly. Experiencing it is definitely a vivid memory.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Because you always are like, oh, I didn't think that that could happen, but it happens a lot easier than you think.
Look, the first time, it was definitely more like I was on the receiving end, and it was more the giver's intention than mine.
Okay.
So that was a bit surprising. She just kind of told me it was happening as it was happening, and I looked back and was like, oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, I've definitely had better experiences since then.
Uh-huh. Female ejaculation is another thing that seems to scare women. I had a friend who used to think that she was pissing herself every time she would use a rampant rabbit, and I had to kindly tell her that it wasn't urine, that it was actually female ejaculate, and that was a good thing. Do either of you have any experience with female ejaculation?
Yes.
It's a nice time, right?
It's such a hot time. Like, you feel accomplished, and, like, if it's, you know, not something you've done but something you're doing, you feel great. Like, No negatives.
I remember seeing it in porn and becoming quite obsessed with it and then beginning to do research because I wanted to know how to make myself squirt. I was like, this is a good time. And there was actually quite a lot of educational videos on YouTube. And the way that this one woman I found that I thought was really good spoke about it was she said, a lot of the time women don't allow themselves to ejaculate because it's a similar feeling to urination. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, oh, well, I don't want to pee during sex, so they kind of get the other person who's stimulating their G-spot to stop. And so what she recommends doing is just go to the bathroom, go and pee, and then go back to it. If you've already emptied your bladder, then you don't need to pee. For our listeners who don't know much about female ejaculation, it's really just from G-spot stimulation. Are there any tips or tricks that either of you would like to give our lesbian listeners who've never tried female ejaculation or might be scared?
I think it has to do with individual partners. It's going to be different for everybody. I think one of the main mistakes that men make is trying to devise a formula for women to come. Mm. That's a lot, like...
Like every woman.
Yeah, yeah. Like every woman is not going to have the same ways that they need to be stimulated to come. And you just need to read your partner.
Uh-huh. And let's lose the shame, like actually make your sexual partners feel comfortable and
put the cum in comfortable.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Hello, this evening's show has been all about lesbians and sex. What a nice time. I have Danny and Ellie with me, and we've been talking about being horny lesbians. Hi.
Hey.
Hey. Still here, still horny. What do you girls think about gender roles and playing a part in how lesbians have sex? You know, like the traditional butch and femme dynamic. And
when you get asked, who's the boy?
Yeah.
Who's the man in the relationship?
Yeah.
You're missing the point.
Do you think that in those really like obvious butch and femme dynamics that gender roles do kind of play a part in how they have sex?
I think it's more of an energy thing. Mm. Like someone will have like a really strong masculine presence and it generally attracts a more feminine kind of woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm very attracted to femmes, but I'm attracted to like that kind of boyish energy in a femme.
Yes.
Yeah, you mean like an alpha?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. An alpha type. personality?
Well, I think that it's just kind of a shame that a commanding kind of energy is seen as masculine, that that's mm-hmm. not even considered a feminine trait.
But it's a similar thing of, like, the power that you feel when you're wearing a dick, right? You don't want to feel powerful because you're wearing a dick, but you do.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. There are lots of other factors that play a part in libido for women, though, and I find things like staying fit and healthy helps me to feel good about myself and therefore feel sexy. But, like, mental health and libido are really linked, and a lot of people who are on different medications for things like depression and anxiety, those medications can play a really big part in their libido. I don't know if either of you have any experience or knowledge across that. I think, Ellie, you've mentioned before about different meds that have limited your libido.
Yeah, I've been on SSRIs in the past, and as much as they will work for some people, definitely not what I needed. Mm. Like, it was a lot more than just the libido issues I experienced that made them really not compatible with me.
Mm.
But that was a massive part of it.
Yeah. I've had some friends who have opened up about that, and I think that there's a lot of shame around that as well, is that people are like, okay, so I'm going to fix this one part of me with medication, mm-hmm. but it's actually going to break this other part of me in the meanwhile. And so they're sacrificing their sexuality to fix their mental health, and I think that's something that we're not talking about a lot mm-hmm. as well.
I've heard somebody on a podcast mention that there is medication you can take to combat the loss of libido, not Viagra. How many counteractive measures are you going to take when you're fixing an issue? I was definitely choosing getting off the medication and having sex and enjoying it over, you know, my mental health, air
even,
quotes.
Yeah, even a lot of contraceptive medication really affects people's libido as well. You know, I've heard of people who have had marinas in and they've had some issues with that. Even just the contraceptive pill, even the way that the pill can make your body change and your hormones change.
Chemically, right?
Yeah, chemically and your mood. Like, all of that plays a part in libido. And so it's a sensitive thing to get right all the time for women. And people not talking about that as well is another big issue.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
I'd like to thank our wonderful guests, Ellie and Danny, for coming on the show and sharing their perspectives on being horny lesbians living in 2019. Thank you both. It's been really nice to share a studio with you.
It's been so fun.
Yeah.
My absolute pleasure.
Let's talk about some takeaway points from what we've discussed. Lesbians are horny too.
So horny. Some of the most horny people I've encountered ever.
Yeah, let's remove all these stereotypes. Sharing is caring. Don't discount opening up relationships or dating multiple people. It may just be the key to a healthy sexual relationship for you and everyone else around you. Mental health, physical health, they're both really highly linked to your libido, so be sure to care for all aspects of your health. And like, every day should be Lesbian Day of Visibility. I know a lot of people experience having to go into the closet in their workplaces and whatnot, and that's really crap.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important to be visible every day for everyone else around you and for young people coming out too. Thank you for tuning in to Well, Well, Well. You can listen to our shows all podcasted on Spotify now, as well as iTunes and on the Joy website. That's joy.org.au/well, well, well. You have been listening to Renee with special guests Ellie and Danny. We will be back again next Thursday at our new time of 9 p.m. Stick around. We've got our mosh pit coming up, which is the punk, metal and hardcore show. This has been Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
For sexual health, mental health and your overall well-being, this is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.